All right. The question or the comment is that that there are some known and perhaps patched issues involving firewalls with buffer overflows. Yeah, those are separate issues. I'm not really trying to talk about some of the, you know, the more detailed security issues here. These are just, I'm going through the basics of NAT. Yes, there are other firewall issues. Right, if you can do a buffer overflow in a firewall, there's all sorts of things possible. Okay, we're in static mode here, outbound. This is going out. The firewall overwrites the IP source address with the public IP address. So this is just like we saw in hide mode. This is the packet going outbound. Since the from IP address on this packet is a local non-routable address, the firewall has to change it on the way outbound. The question is, does the firewall accommodate a single or perhaps multiple hide addresses? My understanding with the Checkpoint Firewall One product, it's only one IP address per, say, subnet or per group or per rule. My experience with the Cisco PIX firewall is that you can designate a range of IP addresses and it will randomly select among them. That's even better. Present your opponents with, you know, 100 IP addresses and individual traffic is bouncing around between them. Sort of a spread spectrum sort of approach to it. So it depends which product you have. Firewall One, I think, typically goes with one, but I know that Cisco PIX, you can put a range in. We're going to talk about it here in a minute, but of course, any IP address that you're hiding behind for NAT has to be a public address that you own, right? You can't just pick some random IP address, because then your traffic will go out, but it won't come back. The remote public server, it sees the request. It looks perfectly reasonable. It looks like a valid request. It just flips the two addresses, puts the payload in, and sends it back. This is just a standard response from a web server. Coming back in, the firewall has to do the translation again. Since it was addressed to the virtual public IP address, it now needs to be disambiguated and sent back to the correct internal address. So the moral of the story here is that your network address translation box changes one address on the way out and one address on the way in, and that's it. You just have to get the right one. The DMZ server receives the reply from the internet host. The client has no idea that NAT was used, and the server has no idea that NAT was used. So again, as long as you're using safe protocols that don't embed an IP address inside the payload, then this shouldn't be a problem. Let's do the last one here before we take the break. And again, this is going to be for people trying to connect to your inbound, to your web servers. These are people on the internet trying to connect into your web server, your FTP server, any of your public servers. And again, here's the four addresses. It's being addressed to your virtual public address. A leading question here, where does the remote internal, the internet client, get this static virtual public address? This is leading to the DNS discussion we're going to have in the next hour. If you have more than one IP address assigned to a particular TCP/IP host, you have to be careful to make sure that you load up your DNS servers with the correct address depending on who's going to be querying that DNS server. So if this is a public DNS server that you want people on the internet to be able to get to your server with, then you have to make sure that you're using one of your virtual IP addresses for it, right? You don't want to load up a public DNS server with a 192.168. That won't do any good. They'll never get to you. So just I want you to just keep in mind that one of the issues you have to resolve with network address translation is how to load up your DNS servers. On the way in, the firewall overwrites the destination address with your private address. Your DMZ server sees a request from an internet host. It replies. The firewall, on the way out, this reply, the firewall has to overwrite the source address one more time so the packet appears to be coming from a valid internet address. And lastly, the internet client out there receives the reply from the DMZ server. The client has no idea that NAT was used. The server has no idea that NAT was used. So I just wanted to enumerate here the four different types or the four different, inbound and outbound with both hide mode and static mode and just sort of step through it. It's not that complicated once you sit down with, you know, paper and pencil and work it through. It's not that tough. You're only changing one address in each direction. And all you're doing is just maintaining the consistency that the packets have correct addresses, whether they're on the inside or the outside.
How do you protect your LAN from your compromised
DMZ? The question is, how do you protect your LAN from your compromised DMZ? Well, you do it in your firewall with rules in your firewall, and that you don't allow any connections from hosts in the DMZ into hosts on the LAN. So you plan ahead, and you say, well, what if somebody totally owned my web server? What's the first thing they're going to do? They're going to try to use that as a stepping stone, a springboard into the rest of your network. And at that point, the firewall is going to stop them as they're trying to connect from the inside. So this is the main reason why you want to have your DMZ and your LAN on separate NIC cards, separate LAN segments, so that the firewall has the best chance possible of still providing a defense there. Your DMZ is sort of a land where things are partially trusted. You'll let people from the outside in to some degree to get, you know, on specific port numbers, but if something on the DMZ starts trying to connect back into your LAN, you don't allow it. And so even if it's totally compromised, that's okay, because you still have a firewall protecting your inside LAN. Yes? The question is, that could be improved with a cascading firewall? Sure. Question? Is there a reason why some services don't go through a firewall like voice? Some of the new multimedia protocols are very complex. They open up a control channel, and then they send all sorts of port number information about it, about the connection, and then they open up a whole bunch of random high TCP ports in order to send the data. Those of you who have worked with other access control lists, et cetera, you know that FTP is sort of a strange protocol, right? It's a strange, not well-behaving protocol, because once you do that port 21, port 20 thing, you get it set up, and then all of a sudden there's this discussion between the server and the client about which random high TCP port number are we going to use for the data channel. Well, if you have a static access control list, you can't prepare for that, because if somebody's picking port, 5021, well, you can't set up an access control list that you're constantly changing for that. So FTP is special. FTP is different. And that's why you need a firewall that's smart enough to understand the protocol and actually sniff the packets. And this is what this is how FTP is handled in a firewall, is the firewall is actually sniffing the control channel and says, oh, you want port 5021 open? Well, it temporarily makes a hole in the firewall just for those IP addresses and just that port number, and only while the connection is valid. So if you're running some of these sort of the new Microsoft multimedia H323 or whatever they are, I don't know all the details. You need a firewall that understands them and can sniff the control channel and say, oh, okay, I need to open up these five high TCP ports. It has to be a dynamic, intelligent thing. You can't just, set something where we're going to allow this or we're not going to allow that. It requires some real dynamic thinking going on in order to make that work. It's just about time, so I'm going to release you. We're starting again at 4 o'clock on the dot, and ask me questions here in between. Of NAT for newbies and not so newbies, we're going to run until 4:50 p.m. We have several more issues to discuss. I'm going to talk about the benefits of using NAT. I'm going to talk about some special firewall configuration issues. I'm going to talk about DNS. Questions at this point? Those of you who were here before, any lingering questions? Anything that we can talk about before we go forward?